Well, Susan.
Yes.
You're here to talk about food, I gather.
That's what I do. Yeah. I don't, you know, there are a lot of food subjects right now.
I hear you write about it, too, sometimes.
Yeah, I do.
What did I say here in the schedule?
Okay.
Well, let's see what it says.
It says, Susan.
I'm a food writer. Talks about food.
Wow. It says?
Yep.
That's
well, there are many subjects. I don't know if I'll see you before Thanksgiving, which is in 2 weeks. We can talk about Thanksgiving.
God.
We can talk
another
about
gosh darn holiday.
Another gosh darn holiday. We can talk about scallops because the scallop season opened on November 1st.
I say scallops.
I say scallops. And then we can talk about our neighbor, our neighbor Ruth Reichel, who's just come out with a book, and I had the great pleasure of interviewing her on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And told her I would.
For what?
I interviewed her for my column in the Register Star, and also a real interview for the Nantucket newspaper. So it was a dual interview, and she was charming.
Cool, really worked that.
Yeah, I got to. If I'm going to make the trip to Spencertown, and I'm going to ask her for her time.
I was going to raise the fact you call her our neighbor, but she lives in Spencertown. Which what does that take? Like 40 minutes?
Yeah, it's, no. Oh. And it's all the same county. It's Columbia County. So
sure.
She's our,
you could bring her to the station and get another interview.
Well, we can ask her. We can certainly ask her. Yeah.
Pass.
Oh, dear. she just cut me off?
No. I passed on that interview potential. Oh. Ellen can interview her.
Okay. What? Shall we start with Thanksgiving, or shall we? I was thinking today or recently a lot about I don't know if this is horrible horrors but having a turkeyless Thanksgiving.
No.
Because I think the turkey is the least interesting thing about the Thanksgiving buffet.
A lot of people would agree with that.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, last year we got this really great Pagasso turkey.
Uh-huh.
Made a difference.
It did. And Ellen, you'll be eating it this year with us.
I know.
Won't that be fun?
Yes.
All the young kids throwing bread and stuff, like a bunch of characters out of P.G. Woodhouse.
P.G. Woodhouse. I was going to say Animal House. Tom is with his erudite references.
Thank you. Thank you.
Am I going to have to sit at the children's table?
There is no children's table. It's all the children's table.
It's all children. All the way.
No, I think it's possible. I mean, I always make a beeline for all the side dishes. I love stuffing. I think you can make stuffing without putting it in the turkey. I think I like
stuffing
all the
and cranberry sauce.
Cranberry
sauce
and Brussels sprouts. I like Brussels sprouts.
I love Brussels sprouts. And you know, more and more people are serving them in local restaurants, and they're doing great things with them. That food studio Brussels sprout dish, Yumsters.
I haven't had it, but I.
Ooh, what do they do with them?
I don't know. It's Asian stuff that I have no idea what it is, but it's some kind of pasty dressing. They put charred pieces of, I think it's garlic, maybe, I don't know, and little red I don't know. It's just they do interesting, and they kind of crisp them.
Yeah. Well, and Brussels sprouts lend themselves to being crisped. They want to be crisped. I did a recipe more than a month ago because I had a wonderful Brussels sprouts dish when I was on the Cape, and it's Asian.
Would that be Cape Cod or Cape May?
That would be Cape Cod. Sorry. It would be Cape Cod. And in particular, it would be Provincetown at a restaurant called The Canteen. And I don't think your radio station would mind if I mentioned them. They're closed now for the season. But they make an amazing Brussels sprout dish that has things like fish sauce and hot peppers and garlic. And it gets roasted and it gets
getting so crunchy.
Helsinki now does a roasted Brussels sprouts with pancetta. Was it pancetta? I think it was pancetta or prosciutto. I don't know, prosciutto. And then an aioli that's really tasty. It was good.
You can make a wonderful sauce, gravy, without using meat stock. I mean, you can make a wonderful thing with, making a roux with lots of butter and flour and then cooking that off and adding marsala and adding cream and you can make a really nice sauce drizzle over all this stuff.
No, I agree. And it was just such a revelation that Brussels sprouts could be delicious, given the fact that I grew up having them for Thanksgiving and they were horrible.
Were they just boiled or something? Just
basically boiled.
Mm-hmm.
Which is probably the dullest thing you could possibly do with Brussels sprouts.
Well, just go to the farmer's market and see what's there and see all the. Well, there's celery root right now, sometimes called celeriac, and there are apples. And there's a wonderful recipe from the southwest of France, which is a puree of celery root and green apples.
My wife, the apples. My wife has made the purees of celery ack, and it's been really delicious.
So you, with this one, you cook.
That might be in your future, Ellen.
Oh, wonderful. So this is, so you see the celery ack at the farmer's market. There are several vendors that have it. Peel it, cut it into pieces, and cook it with milk. I cook it with milk, and then at some point when they get soft, add cut chunks of green apple. Because the green apple cooks much faster than the celery root. And when they're all cooked and soft, let it cool off and then blend it. Salt and pepper. It's delicious because the milk adds the creaminess. And
you have to peel the apple, right?
You have to peel the apple. And you have to peel the celery root.
I had a dish the other night at Farmer's.
Yeah.
A vegetarian dish.
Isn't that a good place,
yeah,
by the way, parenthetically?
And I almost never order vegetarian dishes, but it was outstanding. It was a squash that I was unfamiliar with fennel, with some ricotta cheese, and a sort of smoked tomato sauce.
Oh my God,
unbelievable.
But was there, was it on gnocchi or something?
No, it was no pasta. Yeah. It was really good.
Yeah, they're doing a nice job.
Wow.
Yeah.
I went to noodle night at Crimson Sparrow.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
And?
Ramen night?
They're doing all kinds of noodles there on Wednesday nights, I gather, for a while.
Yeah.
And it was lovely and delicious, and the broth was unbelievable. And we got as a side dish butternut squash that was, roasted, but it was, the inside was so creamy. You know, it was crispy on the outside, big and cut up in fairly large chunks. It was incredible.
And as I'm sure listeners of this show know, I love the delicata squash.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, it is good, isn't it?
Isn't it? It's delicious.
How do you prepare it? Same way as any other
roasted
squash?
Yeah, oil, salt, and pepper. That's it.
Do you leave the skin up?
Oh, yeah.
Do you eat the skin?
Oh, yeah.
Some of the squash, the skin roasts up nicely, and you can eat it, but not most of it. The hard skin squashes, you just sort of eat around it.
Yeah.
You're eating fish and you're not eating the skin. But so butternut squash is a big favorite, and it's a very very versatile, very versatile. I mean, there's
so
many things you can do with it. But I'll tell you what I've been making lately, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
There's a recipe out of Yotam Ottolenghi's book, Jerusalem, which I think I've talked about Yotam Ottolenghi many times.
Yes,
and it's...
no, I didn't mean that sarcastically. I meant it.
Butternut squash tahini. And it's a matter of peeling the butternut squash, cutting it into chunks, roasting it with olive oil, salt, and cinnamon. And then pureeing, cooling it down, pureeing it in a food processor with sesame tahini, Greek yogurt, and garlic until it gets this into a creamy smooth. And then you put it on, you spread it on a plate, and then you drizzle date syrup on it and sesame seeds. And I've served it with carrot sticks, as a dip, or with black sesame crackers, because it's so beautiful to have those purplish black sesame crackers, which you can get in lots of shops here. With this bright orange dip. And that's a wonderful thing to serve, with drinks maybe before Thanksgiving dinner.
Wow.
Very delicious. And then, amongst all the other things, it's a great, easy soup to make, easy fillings. I've talked about making a butternut squash kind of mixture and then stuffing it into crepes and having savory crepes with butternut squash in them.
I am so hungry.
I'm thinking I got a spaghetti squash sitting on my counter at home that I'm going to cook as soon as I get
home.
And
you like that?
Yeah, I don't mind it.
I found it a little bit bland. And you put a tomato sauce on it or something?
Yeah.
I like spaghetti squash. I like all squash.
I
don't know about Hubbard squash. I haven't had Hubbard squash in years.
Was that other squash you just made?
Kabocha.
That's what it was last night at Farmer.
Yeah?
A kabocha, whatever you call it.
Oh, yeah. It's delicious.
What does it look like?
Yeah, it was good.
It's green and it looks. It could go like a pumpkin. I'm describing.
Oh, yeah.
This is radio, not television. It could be like a flat pumpkin. It could be. It has various shapes. So it can have a green speckled skin.
Is it light green or dark green?
Dark green, and the people in the Hudson Market have several vendors have it. It's a wonderful squash. I've roasted that and just drizzled. I mean, I like sweet and sour. I mean, you're getting my taste with all the recipes I give. I like to drizzle like pomegranate molasses on an olive oil and salt after it's been roasted, because that gets crunchy on the outside.
Here's a restaurant question.
Yes.
Do you find it a little surprising when a vegetarian entree is priced at the same point as a meat or fish entree?
Yes and no, because I think they're probably using really good vegetables, which are cheap.
Okay.
The organic vegetables, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that the meat, sometimes you just make a burger, where vegetables require peeling and dicing.
Mm, sure.
And, you know, sometimes they require more labor, which is, I think, the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
You know, when I was in the catering business, people say, oh, just make a crudité. A crudité takes forever.
Right.
You're peeling, you're slicing, you're dicing, you're cutting carrot sticks so they're all uniform. And it's labor. Vegetables can be labor intensive.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
So
remember that, folks. Vegetables can be labor intensive.
Uh-huh.
I agree.
The other subject, and I'll get to Ruth because it was incredibly interesting to talk to her. But the other subject is our scallops. I've been doing for the past month or so the recipe in Rural Intelligence. Does anybody read Rural Intelligence around here? Do you know about Rural? No.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty emphatic.
I used to read it all the time.
And he's giving me this impish grin, which is up to interpret. You used to read it. Well, anyway.
I'm aware of it.
You're aware of it. My
picture has, of course, been in it.
And your picture has been in there. Ellen's picture.
Usually with Ellen.
Well, I
think we were in there together once.
Were we?
Yeah.
It's an online magazine that covers the Berkshires, Northwestern Connecticut,
right, really?
Columbia, and Dutchess County.
They used to talk about Hudson a bit more than they do.
Yeah, I think it depends on... Well, they have a new editor now.
They cut back.
But I've done the recipe, filling in for their usual recipe person while she's out promoting her new book. So I've done it, four recipes for them, but I think I'm finished for the moment. But I've talked about Hudson a lot because I'm writing from Hudson. But my last recipe was one with bay scallops, as I was just on Nantucket again, this time for a sad reason, but we won't go into it. But I got bay scallops because the season opened on November 1st. And I think there are places around here that get bay scallops from the Northeast, which are exceptionally...
Are they the tiny ones?
They're the tiny ones, the bay scallops, yeah. And they're just sweet as candy. They're wonderful. And they require about 60 to 90 seconds of cooking. You just want them...
Wow.
You just want them to get opaque. So you're going to do... With this, the scallop recipe that I turn to most often is alla veneziana, which is a very simple seafood preparation, which requires that you make the whole topping first because you don't want the scallops to cook with it. You make a... You saute garlic and hot peppers and some olive oil. You add a little white wine or white vermouth and some lemon juice. You let that cook down till it gets a little bit syrupy. And then at the last minute, just before you're going to serve the scallops, you throw them into this. They cook for 60 to 90. You wait till they get opaque, and then they're done. And then a handful of chopped parsley. And what I did for this recipe, which is a very festive recipe, is made a pomegranate risotto.
Oh. Stop my heart.
It is so beautiful. Oh. If you will go look at Rural Intelligence this week, you'll see the photographs. So, pomegranates are around too, and it's something that I had in the Veneto in Italy. You make the risotto, and instead of using white wine, you use Prosecco. And then at the end, you throw in just pomegranate seeds, and you get this beautifully studded risotto. You know, it's like jewels inside. And then you throw these scallops with all the green sauce from the parsley on top, and it's delicious. It is lip-smacking good. But, scallops, as I said, they want to be cooked very, very quickly, or even ceviche, cooked in... Just some lime juice and scallions and hot peppers. Delicious. Delicious.
I'm hungry. You didn't bring chocolate this week, Ellen.
No, I was going to ask Susan if she brought the chocolate.
Got me through
the show. Oh, I forgot. I forgot to bring the chocolate. I'll bring next time. And then, this Ruth Reichel, who is really,
Who?
Ruth Reichel, who has been, sort of been in our... People who have been looking at food for years certainly have been looking at Ruth Reichel, who has been involved with food since she was She wrote her first cookbook when she was 21 years old, called A Fistiere. And I think she started in Berkeley, was a co-owner of a restaurant there, and she did many other things, and she became the food critic for the Los Angeles Times, and then she was a food critic at the New York Times for 10 years before she went on to, I think, the job that she's most well known for it was the editor of Gourmet Magazine.
Right. That didn't, not for very long, though.
I mean, she was 10 years.
Oh, really?
10
was
years. And it was a very shocking end to the story for everybody that was at Gourmet. I mean, she was away on tour for a new Gourmet cookbook. She was on the West Coast, and she was summoned to get back as soon as possible. She and her staff were in the office the next day, and Cy Newhouse, who owns Condé Nast, came in and just couldn't even look anybody in the eye and said, it's done, it's closed. People walked out of the conference room and were given boxes to pack up their desks and leave. So she had, I mean, understandably, it was an abrupt end, and she had to figure out what to do next. And she and her husband and son have had this house in Spencertown for almost 20 years. And came up here and just started to think about what to do next and got back into the kitchen. It sounds strange, a woman that was so involved with food, she got back into the kitchen and started to cook. Well, I mean, she had test kitchens cooking for her when she was the editor at so many of these places, or she was going to restaurants. So she started to get back into the kitchen and cook seriously. And the subtitle of this book, My Kitchen Year, 136 Recipes That Saved My Life. And she started to reconnect, and she reconnected with readers by doing this cookbook, and she just connected with this community and connected, you know, she started this off with tweets, and she tweeted constantly as she was writing the book. The tweets are included in the book, and there's a lot of prose in here too, you know, what prompted the memories of the recipes that are included.
Do you tweet?
I do not tweet.
We don't tweet.
No, I don't either. We're afraid that's eluded me.
Number of words limited
yes.
in a tweet?
Number of characters.
Characters.
140.
40, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So is it like haiku?
Well, I mean, shall I read one of them so you can get the idea?
Sure. I see she signed the book
for
you, but she didn't do like a tweet sign.
She said something very nice. Do you want me to read it?
Sure.
You want me to read that too? She said, for Susan, with many thanks for a really interesting conversation.
Oh, lovely.
Which was nice. So the first tweet that came out.
She writes big.
Well, when you sign a lot of books, she just when I saw her the other day, she had just come back from being in 24 or 26 cities, and she was leaving for Montreal the next day. So it's a lot. This is the first tweet, I think, that she sent out after she came up here and started to think about what had just happened. Mysterious, misty morning, crows wheeling, cawing, storm is on the way, coffee black, eggs fried, toast burnt, gourmet's over, what now? And
Tom,
just
nobody said it was poetry. It's just a tweet.
It's a tweet.
Great.
It's actually less than I counted the characters. It's less than 140.
Oh, that's good.
come on, Tom. She's listen to this. What else? We don't even realize what. And this is my column is about her tomorrow, and I have some of her recipes. Column, you know where it is. Mm. She's kind of a post Julia Child. Julia Child taught us all about French cooking. Ruth taught us more about ethnic foods. She taught us especially about Asian food.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of those recipes in this book using local ingredients. I mean, she has prowled the area. She actually told me about a very interesting farm, which I went to directly after I saw her, which is in Ghent, but the Ghent that's sort of near Harlemville, near where Hawthorne Valley shop is. Mm-hmm. It's a farm called Et Cetera. Do you know about it? It's run by Koreans, and they grow their own rice. They have two rice paddies. They grow sugar cane. They grow ginger and bok choy and all the Asian vegetables. But I was most interested in the rice. I mean, can you imagine growing rice up here? And I went after I left her. It's kind of at the junction of Route 7 and Route 21. And I bought a bag of their organic brown rice, which looks gorgeous, and I can't wait to cook it. But anyway, that Ruth, she told me about that. She, the recipes are very interesting, and they're written in a very interesting style. In the beginning of the book, she talks about staples and, you know, what to have in your pantry. So the recipes are, the ingredients are listed as shopping lists, the things that you need to buy, and staples, the things that you should already have in your kitchen. Which is something that we were doing at the mm-hmm. beginning of this whole thing, is trying to build a pantry.
Right.
Things that you could have that you'd be able to cook almost anything. You just have to sort of fill in the stars, maybe, the starring ingredients.
Well, and the other latest thing is trying not to waste food. You should look in your refrigerator and see what's usable.
That's another thing she
talked about. It all goes in the soup, as far as I'm concerned.
Goes in the soup, and, you know, that's a big trend. Now. Well, it's a big trend. It's a trend that's growing. I think that started in Europe. I think mandated almost by law that nothing be thrown out. Mm. And, you know, that chefs are using everything. They're using the gratings, the peelings from carrots, and the pulp from purees, and making things. So there is a lot of waste of food, and this is something that she's quite passionate about and talked about.
Mm.
I mean, I asked her a lot of, I think I can probably talk about this because you may not read this because this is from the Nantucket paper, but one of the questions I asked her is, you know, two questions I can talk about. One, I asked her, what were some interesting chefs? What chefs did she admire right now? And she talked about Dan Barber, who owns Blue Hill. There's a Blue Hill in New York City, and there's a Blue Hill in Tarrytown at Pocantica Hills, actually, on the Rockefeller property,
mm-hmm. yep.
where he has a farm.
Couple times.
And Blue Hill is named for his grandmother's farm, which was in Great Barrington. And I think he did a dinner called, and I can't tell you the exact name. I have it written in my notes, where he did this, where he's extremely, he's a very intense chef, and he's a deeply intellectual chef. And he used every bit of every piece of food to make this. And she said it was absolutely delicious.
There's who is the chef that we talked to on the phone here in the studio once?
Oh, the guy who lives up on the other side, upstate.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And he used everything, you know.
But he grew a lot of that stuff.
He grew everything. He would use the bark off trees and the pine
the
needles.
I remember the essence of violet very clearly.
Because you went there.
No. You have to. It takes 5 years to get a reservation there.
Oh, it's someone I know went. I thought it was you. No.
No.
Not
right.
me.
It's not
in
my
you?
Budget, I don't think. So, yes, I mean, the other question I asked her, which I just asked her if she went on a road trip with Calvin Trillin, where would she like to go?
Calvin Trillin?
Because he's a friend of hers, and she talks about him in this book.
He goes to Kansas City.
Well, that's
barbecue.
What she said. She said that she's never had barbecue with him, but she said go any place with him because he's so funny. Well, we didn't need, we know that. At least I know that. He's laugh out loud funny.
Mm-hmm.
Except the last article that he just wrote in the New Yorker, which was very scholarly about barbecue. Did you read that one? The New Yorker food issue, which was a couple of weeks ago. He wrote all about barbecue and barbecue terroir, and especially in North Carolina, how you go from town to town, and it's the barbecue sauce is different according to the place you go, because it's dependent on the immigrants who came here and whether they're German immigrants and their barbecue is more sweet and sour. Depends on where the people who created the barbecue ethnic origins, and how it was interesting, but it wasn't funny.
It wasn't
funny.
Calvin.
It wasn't, yeah. So, yes, this is what's been in my food news lately. What's been going on with you, food wise,
absolutely nothing. I've been eating a lot of pasta. It's so easy to just,
of course.
But then I heard someone talking about carbs, counting your carbs.
Oh, please.
I eat a lot of carbs.
Ellen, you can eat
Ellen,
carbs.
You got to watch that girlish figure.
I know. Believe me.
Yeah, right.
Well, but carbs aren't necessarily good for you.
They aren't necessarily bad for you either.
No, you need some.
Well, look at the Italians. They eat pasta and bread.
I know. That's
and they're not
true.
Fat.
I don't eat pasta.
I'm looking at Tom. You don't eat pasta?
Not much.
You don't eat cheese. I know you
the problem
said
is
because
when I eat it, I eat too much all the time.
Well, that's the problem. Same you know, I like, I take pasta out of the box, if you'll pardon me.
That's
I don't
Why
make
not?
My own
no, no,
pasta.
No, no, no.
Nothing
pasta,
wrong with dried pasta.
Nothing wrong with dried pasta.
And
nothing.
If there's more in the box, you say, oh, I might as yeah, well finish yeah. it. It's that kind of thing. Or I cook a little too much and, well,
eat
what are
all,
you going to do?
Exactly
throw it away?
I,
you eat it.
You don't want to eat it for breakfast?
I haven't ever eaten it for breakfast.
No, it's like nothing like cold spaghetti.
Well, I've had. Well, actually, if you put it in eggs,
yeah,
it's good,
delicious.
Yeah,
delicious. I mean, why not? You eat toast in the morning.
Because don't Italians like use the leftover spaghetti and make it like a frittata?
Yes,
and take it on mm-hmm. a picnic. That's what I'm told.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure.
I'd probably eat it before I got out the door. But.
It's delicious, and it gets all crunchy on the bottom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I love leftovers.
Yes.
It's well, wonderful to have a refrigerator full of tasty leftovers.
Mm. To go back to the earlier discussion, not only leftover food that you've prepared, but leftover parts of the food that you've prepared. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make a wonderful vegetable broth with potato peel, carrot peel. Yeah. Potato peel is a good base for a vegetable broth.
Mm. Dirt and all?
No.
Oh, you have to scrub it.
Oh, you have to scrub it. Oh,
oh
sorry.
Well.
A little work. Oh, well. Now, this, yes.
All right, now tell me, you know, potatoes have a tendency to turn green if they're sitting around for too long.
It depends on when they've been dug.
The white potato?
Well, it depends on when they've been dug. They have
right.
to, you have to be, you know, some people are very anxious to get them out of the ground and they're not fully cured or whatever. I mean, you've got to dig them when they're just right.
But is that green part bad for you?
I wouldn't eat it.
I mean, I'm sure it doesn't taste very good.
No, you're going to peel it off anyway. But that's exactly what's happened, is that they've been dug too soon.
Uh-huh.
I think. I mean, I not think. I know.
She knows that for a
certainty,
fact.
Certainty, yes.
I know that for a fact, having be surrounded by gardeners. Is it time for me to say arrivederci?
Not quite, but it's getting.
You don't have more events you'd like to
well,
share?
I have more events, but I wanted to say also that this list, Much to Do About Hudson, is available on two websites.
Wow.
Wow.
In case you miss it, in case you can ask me for it if you'd like to receive it by email.
The New York Times, the Boston Globe, where else? Sorry.
It's available on gotohudson.net.
Oh.
And artinhudson.com.
Nice.
Wow, good for you. That's great.
Just in case you know, are aching to know what's going on.
I look forward to your list.
Or people can get it direct to their email, Ellen. How do they do that?
They send me a request to thurston@mhonline.net.
I love that. mhonline.
I know.
It's so old school.
Well,
you're rocking it old school, Ellen.
Very old school.
It's great.
I just didn't want to change my address and go through the process of trying to tell everybody I was changing my address.
Yeah, you're now thurston@yahoo.com. You're now thurston@gmail.com.
Oh,
I know.
And people end up with five different, you know, in my mailbox.
No, I love it when I come across somebody who still has a Mindspring address, which was like one of the first email addresses.
Oh, Mindspring.
Yeah.
Well, I thought, what is the one?
It
has
really
America
dates,
in it
yeah.
or something. It's
AOL.
AOL.
Hotmail.
In New York City, where I once lived, I tried very hard to hold on to my phone number. And when I first got it, I lived near Gramercy Park, not on Gramercy Park. I had the number GR37717.
Cool.
And people would say, GR, what do you mean? Gramercy. I'd have to tell them it's Gramercy 37717. And then the phone company itself dropped those exchanges and mm-hmm. said, use the number. Mm-hmm. So it became 473-7717. I still tried to...
Think of all those poor young readers who don't get the title of the John O'Hara book, Butterfield 8.
That's right.
I had a spring exchange, spring 7.
Well, there when the phone company ran out of words, I mean, those were by neighborhood,
yep.
kind of. Mm-hmm. They had an LT exchange, LT3, whatever. And the people who had it called it lettuce and tomato.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't know that. Lettuce and tomato 5.
So you lived near Gramercy Park?
Yeah.
On an avenue or a street?
On 18th Street.
18th between?
And 3rd, close to 3rd.
So you weren't far.
Alger Hiss lived next door.
What?
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Yeah. In a big apartment house.
Wow.
I know.
Al.
I used to see him on the street. Hi, Al. No.
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 Were you one of his sources?
No.
Yeah,
there he was.
There he
you
was.
You weren't his handler?
That's New York. And especially, well.
I'm sorry?
You weren't his handler?
No.
Were you now, or have you ever been, Ellen? It's the question I'm building up to.
No, I have not. Yeah. But take Susan. She talks about pumpkins and things a lot. She's suspect.
Uh-oh.
You know, there's an Alger Hiss chair at Bard. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
Really? Did he ever teach there?
I don't think so, but somebody endowed a chair in his name. No doubt an unrepentant communist. Of some sort, yeah.
Of some sort. Well, Bard is the perfect place for an Alger Hiss chair.
Yeah.
You know, I went to Bard. Okay.
You did?
You went to Bard?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. I went to Bard so long ago, Leon Botstein wasn't the president.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's going back.
It was a very interesting time at Bard when I was there, too. It was a very tumultuous time, and there were a lot of interesting people that were my classmates, and there were a lot of interesting professors there.
Is that how you happened to be in Hudson, New York? Because you were in the area, knew the area?
Well, no, that's one of the reasons. But I had friends here. There's Amtrak here. There are a lot of reasons mm-hmm. that brought me here in the first place. But you know.
What did you major in there?
Fine arts.
Uh-huh.
Painting. I was a painter. In those days, it was the days when, you know, people.
It was the thing to be.
Well, I mean.
Was my former boss teacher there, Mary Lee Settle? Do you remember her? Writer? Yeah.
I don't think she was there. When was she your boss?
Oh, later in the 80s.
No. But no.
At Bard, she was in Bard in the 60s, I believe.
I think she may have been. Yeah, I was there. That's when I was there. But I can mm-hmm. tell you that who was my freshman year philosophy teacher that I told this to somebody the other night, and they were aghast. They were like, oh, my God. It was Heinrich Blücher.
Right. Hannah Arendt's husband.
Yep. He was my philosopher.
Ah. Cool.
Yep. Very cool. Very cool. And
that's why all her stuff is there now.
Mm-hmm.
Her archive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ellen.
Time to go.
Yeah, it's time to go. Anything you want to wrap up with?
I just want to say happy Thanksgiving, and I'll see you soon.
We'll see you. I guess we'll see you in December.
Absolutely.
How did we get to November so quickly?
How did a year pass? Weren't we just talking about...